Session number 17395, Reel 3.
Norton, Reel 3.
Yes, we kept looking at this little bridge they had left us to get out with. It was just our platoon, this platoon. We had no heavy gear to take, as I said. It was all handheld, bazooka, Bren, rifles. And anyway, we actually did have to walk over this hand bridge, this footbridge, and got back. And from then, I can't recall what happened after we went back. We started to move again. And we moved to a position where I can't put it in order of what happened where and when, but we had another position where we were supposed to have taken this hill, or went up this position. I suppose we were supposed to have taken the hill. And it had been strafed beforehand by the American planes, I believe. And I remember going up to this hill and going into the trenches, to clear the trenches, and I looked in one of the, with the Marauder, I looked into one of the holes of the Chinese Corps. They were very, very clever. Mind you, they had a lot of time to do it, dig these trenches, and small, very small holes and things. And as I went through, there was a Chinaman or a Korean, and he had a pickaxe right the way through his chest. I got a smell of death, and it lingered with me for 2 days. I couldn't eat, and I couldn't get rid of that smell. And that was the only time I ever got that feeling. Anyway, I don't know where we went to for now, whether we went on forward and what have you. But our first thing when we ever got to a position with the British forces, our first and foremost thing to do on a position was dig latrines and dig refuse holes for our tin cans. Because you can imagine five cans or three to four cans per person on a hillside is a lot of cans, and they had to be put. Anyway, we're at this position, this one position, we went up, and what I believe we took over from, some said it was the French Canadians or Turks, I believe it's French Canadians, and we see all these little tabs in the ground, little labels, and we, what the hell are they? And they do, that was their latrine, they'd dug, whoever was up there before us, had dug. Rather than dig one pit, that was our primary thing to do, to dig this latrine and with put some bushes round or something like that, and make it with a an old, whatever, with two pieces of trees or something like that. And anyway, we moved on from there and went to another position. And what was the next place? Got into a position, another position, where we were there quite a considerable amount of time. Wire netting, we had all wire, five barbed wire netting in front of the trenches. And I was on this position, and it was a tremendous big hill, tremendous big hill. It took about 20 minutes to walk up it. And we were there in defensive positions. And there was a tremendous big peak, and then there was a little piece of adjoining piece onto another hill where we were, and on that little adjoining piece they put, I was in platoon HQ at this time because I took over wireless operator on the 88 set. I think the man before me either got shot or something in the backside or something, because the wireless operator had to carry the ear panels. If you went out on patrol, you had to have an ear panel, and each day they changed. Red north to south, orange east to west, or diagonally northeast, southeast, and you had to put them down, otherwise you were no more. Because if the American pilots saw you, they would annihilate you, they would napalm you, strafe you. So you had to take them with you. And anyway, I became a platoon HQ. And in platoon HQ, you become part of wireless operator. I was doing wireless operating. And while I was on this position, we had to go. I remember the only off patrol I done on that particular hillside, we had to go down the forward slope. And in this little joining piece between the two hills. We had our command post, and there was a Major Tate, Major Tate. And he had six New Zealand artillery, supervisors or something like that. And we dug our trenches. We'd had all our trenches. I was on the rear ship, but all sloops were vulnerable to attack, not just forward sloop, because there were so many gaps in the line, they could have come round the back. And so all of the perimeter had to be guarded all the time. And on this one position, we were digging these, but before this happened, I had to go down as an officer, and six of us men, I can't remember who was with me, I think one of the other ones with me, I've lost the names. We had to go down the forward slope, through the wire, into the sort of no man's land, and I remember getting over there, and I had the 88 set and these panels in my back of my pack, and we saw some movement, several miles over north, white movement. And this officer, he crawled to the top of the hill and looked through his glasses, and this movement over there, and he said, have a look. He called me up, he said, Norton, come up. He said, I want the handset. And he said, look through it, and I said, yes, you see them, Sergeant. He got on the handset, called back to this, where we were, I suppose, you know, the command place. And he called in artillery. He says, give us artillery, artillery, please. Something like that. Give them map reference. 41, 22, something like that. Right. We lay down on this, and all of a sudden, and these shells come over. And he said, up 50. Another one. You could feel them coming over top of your head. You know, if left 50, again, and then all of a sudden fire would affect, and then shells came over. They seemed, I don't know how high they were from us, but they'd come from the New Zealand or whoever, after where they were, howitzers from the Americans, because they had the big long johns, long toms, or whatever they called, and you could feel a blast from them when you were near them. Very rare I was near them, but I was once. Coming through somewhere or another, and I felt the blast of them. There was all this talk about blast, but I did feel them. Anyway, they shelled this area with about 20 shells, 20 or more shells. Then all of a sudden, I believe the RAF went, the American Lightnings went in with napalm. And I see the green turn to brown, you know, with napalm.
The vegetation.
Mm-hmm. We had said, right, we better make our way back. We made our way back. And as I was going out the hill to our position, I realised my ear panels. So I stopped and made sure with my pack I tucked all the colours, because you can see a colour for 2 or 3 miles away. And I made sure that those ear panels were well in my pack as I climbed the last bit of the hill. And got back in there, and I think that was just after that we were in his positions in this command post. They dug out a beautiful big hole. It was 8 foot, 6 foot by 6 foot by about 6 foot deep, and I had my trench, I suppose, by those two trees, and this command post about here in the square.
Just a few yards away.
Just a few yards away. And they'd just finished it. We'd worked days and days and days on it. And we just got the roof on. Because we weren't great tunnellers. Not the British. The Chinese would tunnel. And we would never tunnel into the ground that much. We'd make a sleeping quarter. We'd make a trench. And then have a step. And then dig a piece out. But put the top on. Because if you were hit, you were hit anyway, you know. Anyway, they just almost finished putting the roof on, and we used big trees. Must have been 8 to 12 inches in diameter, across, close together. I helped to build it, close together. And then we were just putting the sods, the grass sods, on, face down, to cover the top. And we were, they start the shellers. I believe they were shells on that occasion. And one went right on the top of this shelter, killed my major tape, took the top of his head off, and killed the six New Zealanders. And that went on for quite a while. Then I don't know what happened after that. I moved again to another position, miles and miles away. I don't know whether we were going northeast, northwest, but we were always in a northerly direction. And then,
Did you still have the same job?
I was doing rifleman and on patrol, sometimes on the Bren, because you always, if you're in March and you always shared the Bren and whatever, you carried it for a certain while. I never carried it much. I think the bigger blokes took the strain of the carrying the Bren guns. We never took it out on night patrols, Bren gun. But this next position, I don't know how we got to the next position, how far I'd walked, how far I'd gone. Went to another position, and that was the most worrying time of my whole time in career. We had to, every second night, or third night, depending, I think it was either two or three nights, we had to go down the rear slope, and in front of us was no man's land. It was just short of 38th parallel. It wasn't the official no man's land because it hadn't been constructed then. And there was this big valley, and it had a, I don't know, it was a tributary from the engine, the main, it wasn't the main engine because we walked across it every second night. And on the left, there was a tremendous big wide open valley. And on the left of us, there was no troops. It was a big gap as far as that. We had to, during the daylight, because the daylight time in Korea was comparatively easy, but you still had to be on guard. You didn't have to walk on the horizon and give yourself away or anything like that. You always had to keep on the rear slope. You never had to hang anything out to dry. We never got a change of clothing while we were there. I never had a wash while I was there. They took us once down in one position by lorry to the showers. And when I got there, we left about 8 o'clock. They took so many from the line. When I got to the showers, they broke down. So I came back without a shower. So I never had a wash all the while I was in Korea, apart from my, when I was at the engine. But when I left the engine, I never washed no more properly until I went on R&R, rest and recuperation. And that was the only time I had meals. I did remember on one occasion, which was a rare occasion, they brought us a great big lump of bread and cheese. And that was a treat for me and the American. Anyway, this position I'm talking about, we're at this position. And every second or third night we had to go down, we had to strip of no coins. Well, we never had no reason money, never had no money. Never drew no money for 12 months. I drew all my money when I came back home. If the naffy ever got close enough to you, which was about twice, we'd make our way down the hill at the back and walk down. And we used to buy these big Australian tins of fruit, pineapple, peaches. And we couldn't get back up the hill quick enough to eat them. And that was our little treat. But the naffy would bring up things like safety pins and toy pins and things like that, you know. We did have the American PX drop us a load of stuff off in one place in a, what they call a B echelon. And there was chewing gum, there was combs, and there was goodies and no end of stuff. And we just helped ourselves to it and loaded ourselves up with it. But that's about all we got. And as I say, this position, get back to this position, what we had to do is we had to take all of anything that rattled from my pockets, watches or whatever, And we had to strip down to the bare thing. I used to have my pouches on my belt with the straps. I used to put 3 grenades in each pouch, a bandolier of ammunition, and a rifle. And I can't remember whether we had to have... No, we had a boots, kept the boots. And we had to go down the rear slope, and we had a coil of wire. Big coil of telephone wire. And we had to run this wire out of somewhere around about 2 miles, out into no man's land. And as we went out, we would go down the rear slope, round the back, 7 of us. 2 would hold the stick between the cable, and 1 would throw the wire out and all the way back. And we'd get out to our positions, and as we crossed this valley, they had Harrison tracer machine going most on periodics, and half an hour at a time, or quarter an hour at a time, across this valley.
Harrison?
What they call a Harrison fire, like a certain level fire.
Harrison fire.
Like a Harrison fire. And they would, every time we went round to this, our position, where we had to go, laying this cable out, and the thing is, it was dark. Some of the nights were absolutely terrifyingly cold. And we had to cross this, sometimes it was up to your knees, and another time you'd go up to your waist. And the thing was, we used to take this wire across, cross the river, and then we used to lay in an area designated by the officer or whoever's with us. And he would be on, I don't know when he'd be getting back to HQ or what, and we'd have to lay there until almost dawn. But we had to make sure we used to get up and back into our position before daylight, before dawn, actual dawn. So we had to lay there for sometimes like 4 hours. Freezing cold sometimes, and other times of mosquitoes went in the heat. I used to put mosquito repellent over every part of my body, over my face, in the ears, down my neck. I had a comfy cat, like the balaclava. We'd put a netting all underneath the balaclava, in the shirt, all the way around my shirt and everywhere. Mosquitoes seemed to come in. We used to sort of laugh about it. They used to come in hordes, lick it all off, and another horde would come in. And when you came back, your face and your arms would be peppered. Well, anyway, we used to get back to this opposition. And on one occasion, while we were making a way out, it wasn't a contact patrol. We heard the Chinese all. We had to wait, and they walked right by us within 6 feet. We daren't. We had to lay wait.
You could see them.
We could hear them. We see them at first coming, but we had to lay low, and they walked right through us. We couldn't make contact. That wasn't our mission. And we let them go. They went forward to opposite towards us because we were going that way. Anyway, we made a detour, come back somehow, and got back. And when we got back in the morning, dawn, they said, if you got wet, which was obviously you got wet, you've got a tot of rum. So I used to have a tot of rum every 2 days. I got back one morning, and it was a lovely sunny day. And that was how we used to dry off. You couldn't take your boots off and dry them and all that. You had to, what you got wet during the night, you had to dry off in the morning sun, if it was there. You never had no change of clothing. The only thing I got changed there was twice all while I was there, my blankets. 2 new blankets, twice while I was there. That's all I got changed. And a pair of socks. I never washed them. And you couldn't get them. We were very often without water. I remember one time when we were up this position where we got shelled. The gooks were the deserters from either the Korean Army, South Korean Army, or they were volunteers. But they would start to shell them when they were coming. They used to bring our water up in these big long-tom containers, the shell containers. They were watertight at the top. And they used to bring them up on their backs, our water, when they could get to us. And they shelled us that night, or that afternoon, at the tea time. Well, of course, they dropped everything and ran. And I believe it took them some, like 2 days to regroup the gooks again. to get our supplies. Well, we went without water. We were allowed a tobacco tin for drinking purposes. I think that was, I believe, several days. So when it rained, it did rain, and we caught some water in our ponchos, which were our capes. And we used to use that for shaving. We could use that for shaving, because that wasn't an issue. Anyway, this position, we got back one morning, and sitting on the side of this thing, and there's my mates in one trenchman there, and I don't know the name of this fellow. I don't know if he was one of my regular fellows I went in, or whether he was a replacement for one of the other. And he sat there and he said to me, "I'm fed up." He said, "I've had enough of this," he said. "I don't know what I should say, yes or not," but he did get court martialed. He said, "I'm going to shoot myself." He said, "Get out of this." I said, "No." I said, "It makes me feel like doing it." I said, "But no." I sat on the side of the trench, and of course, we had all our boxes of ammunition, two or three boxes of grenades, and box of each side of, for each of us, ammunition, three or three ammunition. He sat here, and I sat there, and trying to dry them in the sun, and he was cleaning his rifle, and he shot himself through there, in the trench.
Through his left foot.
And through his left foot, yes, it was his left foot. I jumped, and I thought, "Oh, Christ, he's done it." He was screaming. I got out of the trench and pulled him back. Sergeant and somebody else, medic, came up, ripped his, cut his boot off with a knife and his trousers, give him a morphine injection in his leg, and he's laid there screaming and rolling. And he got, but I did hear he was charged with self-inflicted wounds.
Later. Why do you think he did it?
Frightened and fed up with the scare. It was a, in all the time I was there, there was two things in particular that I didn't like. Well, three. The uncertainty of the thing, not knowing, not, you know, the dusk till dawn. It was Korea, dusk till dawn. The shelling, the mortar, you didn't know when, where, when the next one was going to come. And these patrols. The patrols were the worst of all. They worried me more than anything, and that's what worried him more than anything. That's why he shot himself in his foot.
Had he had any bad experiences on
patrol? No, he'd been with me, and we'd passed these Chinese, and we'd come back through the river, very, very, very cold, and whatever. We'd walk all the wire back in again and do the same. And that went on for quite a long time, number of times. Then we moved again from them positions, and another position was we'd been marching, or not marching, but walking for miles and miles and days and days. And then all of a sudden they said, "Right, we got up one morning at about 4. We all had to get, and we moved forward. It was awful atmosphere and what have you. And I think it was part of our A company or the rest of B company. We were laying back. We had to lay back, wait back, for several hours. And all of a sudden, 4:30, 5:00, they moved us forward. And they had just come up to this hill. Well, we'd seen some hills and been to some hills and lived on some hills. But these were rock-faced. We'd come up to this big hill, and it had just been taken by the majority of it, by our other half the company or A company, I don't know. And it was just solid rock, and they reckon that the Chinese had done. I didn't see no airstrikes all the day, but our company, or B company or whoever, took that big hill, and they moved us up halfway up the hill. We were halfway up the hill, and they were bringing down the wounded on the stretchers past us. And we came to this sort of a flatter area and stopped. Then he said, "Come back," and the sergeant or officer said, "Now," he said, "there's three pinnacles behind this big ridge." He said, "And each section's got to take 1, 2, and 3. He said, "I had middle section. My section had the middle pinnacle, and one of the other sections had the end pinnacle. And we got to the center, and we had to fix bayonets. But in all of my training, I done my fixed pants with my full gear on. We had to strut again, take the stuff off. I left with just my pouches and belt, and we fixed bayonets. Make a lot of noise. Funny enough, you're not frightened. You seem to go with it. And you just hope there's nobody there when you do jump. And we ran to these three pinnacles, fixed bayonets. Some went past me to the end. I stopped to the middle one, these things, and this right-hand one. And they'd gone. They'd ran down the hillside. And below me, this boy, Jimmy, come up the side of me and fired a shot off. Well, he scared me, because I thought it'd gone, finished, and I didn't know where it come from. And they stop firing. Well, we looked down, and there was trenches there, and there was two Chinese lay there, dead, smoking, clothes smoking coming from the clothes, and there was a stick grenade at the side of them. We didn't know what it was, booby trapped or what, and there was two brand new Russian submachine guns, like the old American Tommy gun. Don't go down the trenches. One of our blokes went down and got the two bloody guns out, brought them back and handed them in. They were brand new, handles on them were all in like rosewood, and we looked at them and gave them in with a big magazine, round ROM magazine, and we gave them in, and then we stopped. And I don't know, we stayed up that hill that night.
Had the enemy run away then?
They'd gone down the hill and scarped, and they said ceasefire, and then we stayed up there that night.
Why do you think they'd run? Because of
we heard us coming. We were making a lot of noise, screaming and hollering and what have you. But they'd gone. I didn't contact any at all, bar these two dead ones up there in this trench. Anyway, I don't know whether we tried to... We couldn't use our trenches, obviously. I don't know whether we tried to dig in or something, but I believe we stayed up that hill that night. And I believe it was the following morning, I don't know, or whether it was the day after or what. There was another attached to this hill. I believe it attached to this hill. It was like a big basin, big hollow bowl, flat ground, trees on the right-hand side, and another bit of hill or trees on the left. And there was this big basin, tremendous big ground basin. And in the middle was like a man-made molehill, tremendous hill, where that was natural or been handmade. And they said, right, that pinnacle is, there's a Chinese or whatever in a command post. We went down, no, it weren't fixed bayonet job, it was an ordinary rifle job, and we got in line, and we walked down, and we walked towards this thing, and all of a sudden this Chinese came up, and he ripped off his machine gun round in an arc. We hit the deck, ripped the bullets, that was as nearest I've been to a they ripped the bullets in front of my rifle right through. And I looked at the side of me, and some of them were trying to kick the legs up in the air, get shot in the foot. That was a way out. Some of them. And I looked to the right, and I thought, well, where are the bloody sergeants and the officers and that? And I looked to the right-hand side of me as I was laid down, and they were still ripping it. And my sergeant was in the trees with the officers, and I see him. And he was side of this tree, and as this Chinese got up again, he shot him.
Like a sniper?
No, he was in the command post, and he wasn't a sniper. He was my sergeant then, who I was in platoon HQ with. He shot him in the head as he come up to do another round. Well, in the meantime, while we were under attack, this boy, one of the boys, got up to the thing. And I believe the Chinese threw a stick grenade out